Your content doesn't fucking matter, okay?
That right there should prove anything's possible, because Gary Vee was the king of internet, and the fact that I just took his advice of posting content and now I'm opening in front of 4,000 people as Gary Vee, like, how insane is that? I'm just gonna drop out and figure it out. So as soon as I dropped out, I immediately started my YouTube channel. It was shit. It was garbage for the first year and the next 5 years, but it was the most happiest I was. You're always failing. You're never going to be perfect, first of all. I literally bombed 2 nights ago. You have to worry about just getting on stage as much as possible, getting comfortable on your feet. It took me like 5-6 years almost before I actually found my voice. Once you start doing stand-up, you can't go back. It's like a deep, dark life. For the first little while, that's the thing. It's so rough. When you finally start to get success, it's the sweetest thing you'll ever taste. It's a euphoric feeling you can't even explain. I've always been the underdog with when it comes to women. Like, never had those opportunities when I was younger. You know, I was always like fat and overweight and like out of shape. And so that's why I have this drive, man. I was like, I want to fucking throw this shit in people's faces. This was one of those moments I was like, man, if I have to do this for me, it's one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life to this day.
All right, guys, we're back with another episode. We have one of the hottest young comedians in the world. A lot of you would recognize him from his Gary Vee impersonations, but he's so much more than that. Such a good episode too. We'll get straight into it. If you're watching on YouTube, just do me a favor, subscribe if you haven't already, and like this video. Let's go. All right, we're back. We've got a very special guest today. It's actually my first podcast that I've recorded live in the flesh for a few weeks. I've been off. I've been on the benches, and it's a Saturday, but we make exceptions for very special guests, as I said. Now, this guy's come all the way from Canada to see us. He's living in Australia for a year. He's a comedian, an actor, and a viral social media star. I'm sure a lot of you have seen him before. I'm talking about, of course, Nima Maz. Welcome, brother. Thank you so much for stopping in on your way to Brisbane next.
Yeah, appreciate that. It's Nima Naz, though.
Nima
you
Naz.
Almost got it.
What did I say?
It's Nima Maz.
Fuck. You know what? I was literally, because the alliteration gets
I know,
you.
I know.
I was reading over my notes, and I do some highlights, so if in case I need to glance down. And I said that, and I said, don't say Nima Maz, because it's so easy to say.
Honestly, bro, I've gone way worse. People screw up my name all the time. I've got Nimans, Namans, Mimanans. Like, it's just like the whole spectrum. So that's actually pretty good.
I'm you know what? I feel like I get the lights turn on, the bright lights. I get nervous. Like I said, I grew up Western Sydney. I'm used to all sorts of names and accents and everything. Anytime I return to, I put the lights on to turn on a podcast and I got to read someone's name, somehow I fuck it up every time.
Oh, man. So it's just, I think it's just my eyebrows, man. Just so,
the eyebrows.
So
this is so
enticing.
It's so enticing that I lose myself.
Yeah,
first of all, I want to say, man, I'm sure a lot of people watching will recognize you. I love your shit. As I said, we were chatting a little bit before. I'm a big Gary Vee guy.
Nice.
Lucky enough to kind of do some work with him all around the world. And for me, he was like my big first influence in business to do all this stuff. And I know he had an influence on the way you've approached comedy, not just as a creator, but as a business as well. So we'll talk about all that sort of stuff. But I just want to say, like, we're saying, I think your comedy in Australia, I'm glad you're here for a year. I think when you get the right crowds, like as you said, like the ones that are really multicultural, I think you do some really cool things in Australia. And I'm loving that. I fucking pissed myself. I showed Mel when I was doing some research, my voice one day in Australia.
Oh, Australia, nice.
Fucking hilarious. But bro, tell me about it. Obviously, like I said, I saw you from the Gary Vee shit, but I know your journey started long before that. You, like me, like so many other people I've had on the podcast and so many people listening, like it's the people I have on for some context. It isn't always business people. It's anyone that's gone out on their own and said, you know what, fuck this. I'm going to reject the 9-to-5. I'm not going to submit to some life I know isn't for me. And people love hearing about that stuff. It's super inspiring, whether it's actors, comedians, business people, whatever. What was your journey like? I know you dropped out of uni, but talk to me through that kind of thought process and how it all began to become, you know, the Nima that sits here in front of us today.
Thank you for that great intro, by the way. Appreciate that. And shout out to Gary Vee.
Shout out to Gary.
Gary the GOAT.
You know what? I was going to save this to the end. We've actually met before.
Me and you have met?
Me and you have, yeah.
I was going to say.
There's a photo of me and
like,
Gary.
My man, that's fucking like so amazing. So, thanks for knowing I dropped out of university. People usually don't.
I research. I do my research. I'm
like
a professional.
It. You are a professional.
I don't fuck around. You come here
like
Saturday.
Shit.
You come prepared. You
I
come
like
ready.
It. I like it. Am I allowed to swear, by the way?
Absolutely.
I don't want to. I'm not going to start too much, but
yeah.
if I'm doing a Gary Vee impression at some point, I'm going to have to do the
Oh, please.
But yeah, no, I just always had this intuition inside in my heart, in my soul, just in my gut feeling when I was growing up that I wanted to do something that I enjoyed doing that was fun. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what that was until I was in university. And then I discovered that there's a comedy show in my hometown in Toronto, Canada. And my friend took me, and the show I was at was an amateur, like, Humber comedy amateur night. And I was like, what the fuck is a Humber comedy amateur night?
Why don't you explain that to me?
And I asked one of the guys on the lineup. His name is Curtis Connor. I remember vividly. Curtis Connor is actually massive right now. Like, he's huge online. But he was in that program. It was a comedy program that was going on. And it was the only comedy program in Canada. And I asked him, he's like, yeah, man, it's a two-year comedy program. They teach you about writing, stand-up, sketch, TV, movie, like stuff like that, acting, physical comedy, the whole spectrum. And as soon as I learned that, literally, like, that day, I went home and searched how to get into that program and how to drop out of university.
And dropping out of university, obviously, you're very ethnically ambiguous, as you say. That's usually right. People, when they have families from backgrounds like what yours may be, their parents, when they hear drop out of university and take a risk, usually are like, what are you doing?
Frantic, yeah.
Same situation. Oh,
100%. Yeah. Well, there's that fear because of just, like, how you're raised with everything else. Like, it's like, you know, you always have to do well in class, tutoring, after extracurricular, sports, you know, this practice, that practice, like, always on your ass to do a good job. So there's already that kind of fear that, like, oh, what's going to happen if I just, like, drop out and, like, do something completely different from what I'm doing now? But luckily, man, I got to a point where I was so convinced that this was for me that I didn't even tell my parents.
You didn't tell them?
No, I was like, this is one of those bold moments in my life. First time in my life I'll ever take this massive risk, but I had to do it for myself. Mm-hmm. It was one of those intuitive moments where I was like, man, like, I'm sick of being, because I'm the youngest child, right? You met my older brother. You know, I was always pampered. I'm going to be completely honest. I was always pampered, right? Especially coming from an immigrant background. My parents are Persian, right? They're from Iran. Like, they came as refugees, you know, like, they had this bust their ass to give me a good life and my brother. And, you know, I never took those chances on my own ever. I always had to, like, kind of go through my brother or my mom or my dad. But this was one of those moments I was like, man, if I have to do this for me, for myself. It's one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life to this day.
How long did it take you? Like, how long were you at uni before you realized, I just can't do this anymore?
Well, from the beginning. First week.
From the first week.
But I endured the whole year.
You did a year.
Right, because once again, I didn't even know what I wanted to do. I was just like suffering mentally. Like, I was like, man, I don't know. I'm so lazy. I'm so tired. I don't want to wake up for this lecture again. I got to see these people I don't care about. Fucking, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was just different. I was different from the regular crowd of people who are in this class, in this program.
What were you doing at uni before you... You dropped out?
I was in kinesiology. It was like human anatomy, physiology, shit like that. Like, usually people go into chiropractic or physiotherapy, stuff like that. I was going to become a gym teacher. I'm like, fucking stupid. I mean, it's cool. I do your thing, but...
For play sports.
I don't want to fucking teach people. Like, I want to do something that's, like, really rewarding, like, for, like, based off my actions and, you know, and, like, my own career. Like, I don't want to... teach other people what to do. You know what I'm saying?
So you go to that show and you hear about that program, you can go in that 2-year program. Do you end up getting into that, or do you, like, self-teach through trial and error and YouTube and all that? What's your process? Like, once you actually get started, you dive in, do you do that course for 2 years, or how did it all actually start?
Yeah, so I actually dropped out knowing I had to still audition to get into the other program 6 months later. So I had to take a whole year off anyway.
Yeah.
But I was so convinced, and I had such confidence that I was going to get in and that was going to be my career going forward, that I just didn't have a plan. Like, I knew I was going to get in. So I was like, I'm just going to drop out and figure it out. So as soon as I dropped out, I immediately started my YouTube channel. And then that's where I started. Like, it was shit. It was garbage for the first year, but and the next 5 years. But it was... the most happiest I was.
So that feeling that you had, like, I can relate to it, but, like, a lot of people, I had, for some reason, people will say, oh my God, like, that's like, how do you think you're special? Or how do you think, but, like, I feel like as a kid, like, I had that feeling too, that I don't know what, but I'm meant to do something special. Like, I feel like I had an understanding of, like, you get one shot at this life, right? Like, I want to do the coolest shit possible. And I feel like a lot of people have that feeling, but they never get past, like, having the bravery, the courage, the balls, whatever one you call it, to make that first big decision to for the first time take the road less traveled, that they weren't already on that path. It's not approved by their friends, their parents. They didn't have an easy path to do it. That first step is always the hardest. Was it a difficult thing for you to do, or were you just like, this is like every cell in my body's like, dude, bro, I just got to make it happen?
Yeah, 100%. It's definitely a very tough decision to make, and it's been a hard road this whole time, but it's been the most rewarding road. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like, I wouldn't want to do anything else, because what's worth having is going to be tough.
Yeah.
Right. But I like that. I like that challenge. I think I'm very driven and resilient, you know, because of my parents and how, you know, it's that immigrant drive, to be honest. I don't know. It's that immigrant mentality where it's like, we got to make this shit. We got to put food on the table regardless of the situation. That's how I feel about my comedy. I'm like, one way or another, I got to make it. Mm-hmm. I don't know how or who, what the fuck, who I got to cut off or who I got to add to my life or how I got to get into this room or this room. Something's going to happen.
You've been watching Gary Vee, haven't you?
You know I watch Gary Vee. That's how I fucking pretty much got on social media in the first place and my shit took off.
But it's such a basic, and that's why I think for anyone in like the first like 1 to 3 years of business, Gary Vee is the best, because he just reprograms all those stupid beliefs that you used to have, and just, it's so simple. If you want it enough, you will keep trying different things and putting in the work until it happens.
Simple.
So what was the first thing for you? Obviously, you're kind of learning everything in this program, acting, you know, physical comedy, which I thought you must have done training, because I was watching one of your skits in preparation and you were doing like the white mother telling off coming to apologize and just like the little hand. I actually did acting for 5 years as well. I remember doing the movement classes and stuff. I'm like, dude, that is attention to detail with those little spot on things. So when you started going through your training, where was the first doors that fully opened? Was it like the stand up? Was it the skits? Was it, you know, going to auditions for like more of an actor than a comedian? How did the path start to open up for you?
Well, the good thing about what I do and that I'm very grateful for to this day is that I started doing all those things together.
Okay.
I wasn't like a content guy and then started doing stand-up years later or vice versa. I started doing stand-up the same time I tried to do acting, same time I started content. So it's like I've been doing all of them at the same time. Like they've all been on the same journey together in a way, right? Some of them have gone up way faster than the other, but then now, you know, this side is growing more, and then, you know what I'm saying? So I think, but more than anything, the content is king, as Gary Vee says. And that's what's really like solidified me as a comedian to this day.
Well, that's where like I'm, as we were talking about, me and Mel are big comedy fans. I've probably watched like over 100 episodes of Kill Tony. So we've seen heaps of like first time comedians. It's rough, right? Talk to me about like the first like year and in stand up in particular, because like if you make a skit and no one watches it, the worst thing is that no one watches it.
Yeah.
But if you're on stage in front of even 20, 30 people and you're getting started and you're completely bombing or you forget your material, it's fucking rough.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that first year and like what kept you going through all the pain of like failure, which is obviously necessary to become you know, as good as you are now. But talk to me about that.
Oh man, it's you're always failing, because you know, you're never gonna be perfect, first of all. And to this day, I literally bombed 2 nights ago. one of the worst sets I've ever had in my life. So it's like this, you know, you're always learning, you're always growing. But the first year was like you can't even worry about material. You have to worry about just getting on stage as much as possible, getting comfortable on your feet. You know, because like, there's a lot of technicalities of doing stand-up as well. It's not just like telling funny jokes. Like you have to be good at timing, rhythm, delivery, eye contact with the audience, you know, scanning the room properly, you know, timing the laughs, like all those things, right? Like just being comfortable on stage and being yourself, which that first year is still not enough. Mm-hmm. It took me like 4, 5, 6 years almost before I actually found my voice.
So what are you, like 8 years, 9 years?
Right now I'm like around 8 years, almost 9, but like, you know, during the pandemic, a year and a half, I didn't get on stage at all.
Yeah.
So I don't really count those years, but overall, pretty much it's been like almost 9 years.
And what was it for you like, because again, as an actor, you kind of got to go to auditions and you got to get told no so many more times than told yes, but that's even a much less extreme version of comedy. What keeps you going up to the open mics every night or however many times a week you're going and knowing like, most likely for the first however long, 9 out of 10 are going to suck? Is it just like you get used to the failure, you don't care about being embarrassed, or you just know this is what I got to do?
Honestly, man, it's like I mentioned before, I think like I was telling someone else yesterday, actually, I was like, man, like once you start doing stand-up, you can't go back. Because you're in. It's like a deep, dark, dark life for the first little while. But that's the thing. It's so rough. But that when you finally start to get success, it's the sweetest thing you'll ever taste. Like nothing beats it. Just the feeling of getting laughs and crushing for your first time on stage is like you actually can't compare the feeling. I've had sex before and not a lot, you know, very little.
But before you have had it.
Yeah. But yeah, like, you know, good food, right? Always, yeah. I was addicted to food till up until this year, like dealing with all those things. Man, nothing beats getting like the biggest laughs on stage. Yeah. Like it's a euphoric feeling you can't even explain.
What's your driver for that? Like, where does it come from to like that feeling of like getting a laugh and getting the applause and like walking off stage, like with that high of like, holy shit, I've just killed it. What's the driver? What's the motivator for like, for you as a comedian to do that? Just a quick one from me. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you'd know that after scaling Happy Skin Co. to over $10 million per year, I spent close to 18 months creating the Viral Brand Builder program, which teaches someone with zero experience how to launch and scale their very own e-commerce brand. With over 100 training videos and direct access to me, including one-on-one calls, you'll be guided throughout the entire process. Now, we already have a bunch of incredible results from students that are making multiple 5 and 6 figures per month. So if you want to learn how to build a business that has the potential to completely change your life, then click the link in the description and book in an application call today. Spots are limited as you'll be speaking directly to me. So hopefully I'll chat to some of you soon. But until then, let's get back to the podcast.
Like I said before, man, it's just like, I want to make myself proud, but also my parents, you know, it's like, I almost like, you know, usually people are like, oh, I want to get this degree for my parents. Like I still have that feeling, but like more so just because I want to retire them. I want to like, you know, give back as much as possible because of all they gave to me my whole life. And you know, it's like, it's just a pride thing, to be honest. And yeah. I like a little bit of a challenge. I have a little bit of dark energy inside of me too, to like prove some people wrong. So that's a part of it too. Very small percentage, but you know, most of it's for me.
Well, I think as well, like obviously I'm more from the business space, but any entrepreneur, like especially males, I can't say I understand the perspective of a female, obviously who does. Yeah. But
yeah, who does?
Fuck.
Nobody.
Jeez. You know, I'm trying my best here. But it's like, and I've had this with like conversation with like guys just getting started that have just made their first meal, or guys with 100 million plus. Like I feel like any really ambitious person, 99% of that started from some insecurity, some lack, some chip on your shoulder, moment where a girl rejected you, or you were last picked for the sports team. You're just like, I'll fucking show you. Yeah. And I know that happened to me. I can't pinpoint the moment, but like I know in the early stages of biz, I'm like 6-7 years into business now. For the first like 2-3 years of like making all the money, like I was like, that was the driver for me. And then I feel like as you grow up and mature and you want to start having a more healthy relationship with motivation, that has to change. But what's that like for a comedian in terms of like your motivations to keep putting in the work? Like it's not easy. Like how do you stay disciplined in such a creative world where it's like discipline and comedy that kind of seem like two ends of the spectrum? It's like, but you have to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, it's comedy, the entertainment world in general is a very, easy place to kind of go down a spiral because we're always in a bar.
Yeah,
always inside a bar, so there's drinking problems start there.
Yeah,
you know, people do drugs. They just want to party. They want to go hook up with girls or guys or whatever it is. Right? There's a lot of distractions. But for me, I had this intuition in me, like even at a young age, because I started when I was 20.
Yeah,
and like you know, even from that age on, I was like, I'm all in, mm-hmm. whatever it takes. Like I said before, it's like I gotta make this work. So it's like, no, I can't do this. I can't do that. Like, I have to sacrifice. I can't see my friends back home for a while because I have to, like, go out to these open mics, like, lose money, travel an hour, bomb for 5 minutes, go to the next place, bomb again. And then at 1 a.m, travel an hour back to my shitty apartment that I'm renting in a basement of a Finnish lady's house that lives in a hobbit house that's on the other side of the city just so I can get stage time. So it's like, I can't stop now. I can't fuck around. I have to, like, go all in. And also, you just I disassociated myself from a lot of different comedians that like had that like narrow tunnel vision, you know, mindset of like, nah, like everything's just like about this one room or this one place. I'm like, nah, I want to travel the world. I want to be a big touring comedian one day. How do I get there? And so that's why I didn't drink. I didn't like go out with party people. I never stayed around. I did my shit. I went back home. Rinse and repeat the next day. So
like it seems like unless you're in the top like 0.1% of comedy, it's got to be one of the hardest, grimiest. And I don't mean grimy as in dirty, but as in like you said, you got to travel here, some dark room with a bunch of strangers who probably hate you.
Yeah.
You're there for 5 minutes. They fucking don't like you. They don't laugh. You boo. You drive over the other side of the world. Drive over the other side of the world. That'd be funny.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you go, you do another show, and then you're back home and you're like, how the shit? I've gone backwards $50 tonight. How did that happen? Mm-hmm. you're like 8 years in now. At what point, and obviously you've blown up in terms of content, and like content for any creative is like the best marketing tool in 2024. I'm sure all of that changed when you started going viral, building up a bigger following. You're probably selling more tickets than some of the big old school comedians. Obviously I'm pretty tapped into the space. I watch a lot of it, but like they haven't caught on to the new wave of marketing for a creative, right? So now you're in Australia, you get to travel around, sell out all these shows, which is awesome. But I imagine like the first like 5-6 years was far from that, right?
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, well, because the thing is, like, a lot of people they lack this awareness to adapt to the times, and you know, a lot of the big name comedians that you know right now that have been big for the past 20 years,
yeah,
they're big because of, like, you know, it was like 5 people who got famous back in the day, right? But now hundreds of people are famous because of social media,
yeah,
right? And so that's been the biggest boost in my career and many other people's careers. It's because, like, there's no more gatekeepers, mm-hmm. right? You can create your own opportunities. You can build your own billboards. That's how we think about it. So building my own billboard.
What was the moment for you in your career that things started, like, the growth trajectory just started to fucking pop off? Was it a video? Was it one of your characters? What was that tipping point moment for you where you're like, holy shit, all this work I've put in for the last 5+ years, mm-hmm. it's now really starting to come into fruition?
Yeah, there's a lot of things, but it was. I remember it was like beginning of 2019. Mm-hmm. I was making YouTube content up until then, from 2015 and on. And then my brother, that's when he came along to like manage me, and he was like, "Hey, man, you should start posting." Because he discovered Gary Vee before I did.
Oh, really?
And Gary Vee at the time, he was going through some stuff, so he was listening to Gary Vee shit, and he was saying, "Just start posting your content on social media, on TikTok and Instagram." It was like starting to like pick up. And then he's like, just start posting on Instagram, but shorter videos, see what happens. That week, I posted a clip, went like viral for where I was at. Yeah. I was like 2,000 followers, and I got like, I think it was like 50,000 views or some shit. Yeah. I was like, holy fuck, that's crazy. And then it just like, I kept on posting. Like I started off with once a week, and then 2 a week, and then 3. Every single video just starts to like spiral. Me and pages were picking my videos up. This page was picking my shit up. And then slowly but surely, that's what it created a momentum, because of all the years of practice led to this moment, right? It's not just luck of like, just like, fuck it, let me put whatever. It was all the years of practice that kind of led to this moment.
But the skill, exactly. The skill acquisition is over, like, it's about like sharpening the axe analogy. Like the skill acquisition for the years prior, it's not like, okay, you just out of nowhere thought about this really great idea for a piece of content and video popped off.
It's been brewing for years, right? You get into this rhythm for so long, that's when you start to find your voice and you're like, oh, now I'm confident and I'm good. I'm like much better.
Yes.
And then that's when people will find you at the right times when you're good. You know what I'm saying? And so and it's up to the market to decide. That's what Gary talks about, right? It's like, your content doesn't fucking matter, okay? It's up to the fucking market, my man. And that's it, man. Like that's what, from then on, I was like, oh shit, like I believe in the process. Let's just keep posting. Like I don't think about quality at all. I just know what I think is good. Post it, keep moving on.
And say like that's a really good point you make. But you're fully now, you're already committed to it. Clearly your actions demonstrated you're committed to it. But once you've had a taste of the results from that process, the belief is just like locked in forever, because you know you've actually seen that. But I want to ask you that, like, you're getting 50,000, that first 50,000 views versus you posting a video now and it getting 5 million views.
Yeah.
What got the bigger reaction emotionally from you, that first 50K, or if you get another one that does like a few million these days?
Honestly, they're both great, but obviously whenever you see something that happens for the first time, it's always the best feeling, right?
Yeah.
I get videos now that hit only 50,000 views, and I'm like, fuck it, bump.
Perspective, right?
Yeah, perspective, right? It's all about perspective, right? Perspective! And sorry, I just pull out the trigger words.
Everyone listening will know Gary Vee.
So yeah, they'll know. Exactly. There you go. But yeah, anyway, it's for me, I don't actually care about the views as much. I just care about the reps, because mm-hmm. it's like one thing my brother and I always talk about is like, you know, there are people who blow up off of one video one day, and then if people go to their page and check that they only have like 20 videos, they're not gonna follow that mm-hmm. person. But for me, I have thousands of videos on my catalog. It's my resume,
yeah.
right? If a video blows up now, I'll have way more people follow me from that one video than the other person who like has just like a viral sensation like once in a while.
It's like the ocean video. Spray guy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm like, obviously like the most viral video probably of the last year or two. Whenever I go to his page, I'm like, I don't know.
But what is it? Like, what's your brand, right? There's no brand. But I feel like because I've built the brand over years mm-hmm. of like, literally the patience and like, you know, just the consistency, man. Like, you know, because I've been posting videos since 2015, no one knows that.
Yeah.
Until they see my shit now and they're like, holy fuck, this guy's actually funny. And he has all these other videos. Like, what's this? Right? That's what I care about the most. It's like, that's why I feel like Gary Vee's so right about just post, just fucking go off. Like, post whatever you want. Post things that make you happy, that make you laugh, and just like, don't worry about 100%.
The other shit. That's the way to win long term. Like, if you're just doing something you love and you're doing it for the praises and you're, it's so hard though, right? To not look at the numbers and not care.
Yeah.
But like, it's so hard. But if you can and you stick to it, it's like time's undefeated. You will, if you're consistent and you care about it and something you love and you're passionate about it, and you're not just doing it, like, you also, to Gary's point as well, like, you don't want to be discouraged or too motivated by the numbers, but you need to be able to look, and this is like the same advice I give to people in creating content for the, like, personal brands, for everything, for comedy, for business, is so key now. Mm-hmm. Like, you also have to be able to, at the same time that you're not emotionally tied to the results, you have to be able to look at them and analyze patterns. Okay, anytime I do this, it's not really working, but people really love this, or this hook really works. If you're actually thinking about it like that and trying to get better, without the pressure of it needs to slap right now, then you will get there. It's but so many people don't want to go through that, right? They don't want to go through it.
They don't want to do the reps, man. They're too attached to the outcome.
Exactly.
I never think about the outcome. I always think I have the least expectations every single time I post. How I'm like, I don't know, I might do whatever, I don't care.
Was that because
I enjoy doing it. I enjoy doing it, who cares?
You develop that, or is that like something that you've had pretty innate from early on?
I think it's pretty innate from the beginning because I've always been the underdog. You were talking about like people have that like kind of chip on their shoulder. I've always had that. I've always been the underdog when it comes to women, right? Like, never had those opportunities when I was, you know, younger. You know, I was always like fat and overweight and like, you know, out of shape. More than all my friends. You know, I was like pretty much on the reserves on any sports team, even though I was good and like I could do everything. It's just like I was always, you know, in the back of the mind. And so that's why I have this drive, man. I nonstop, I was like, I want to fucking throw this shit in people's faces.
What's
like,
that change? Well, sorry, what's that change been like for you as well to be that lifetime underdog to then you get, you know, all this attention, all this fame, money that comes with it, all these opportunities. I'm sure you've also lost a bunch of weight as well over the last like few months or year. I'm sure, you know, you come, all your old people out of the woodwork want to be friends, a girl start hitting you up, all that. So it's normal. Like everyone goes through it when their life changes in some sort of way like that.
Yeah.
What was your like mindset to that? Was it like, you fucking idiots? Or was it just like, okay, cool, I'll go with it? What was your mindset to all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, well, your initial response is like, oh, fucking now you want to talk to me, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing, before I'd like to preface, like I don't have any money at all like people think. Like people think, oh man, you must be rich because you have 400,000 followers. I'm like, bro, like I'm broke. I'm actually in a lot of debt. But that's because we're building a lot of value and we're investing into the brand because we know we're going to make a lot of money in the future.
Long-term plan,
right? Long-term plan. And the thing is, me and him, like we don't spend money on dumb shit ever because we just genuinely care about making a creating a sick legacy, kind of like, you know, Gary does. He's our internet dad, dude.
I know,
like,
he's
whatever he does, bro, I'm on board. You know what I'm saying?
I think
it's great. I think it's more noble. I think it's more, you know, something that people can relate to, and and it's more real. It's more authentic, and that's what I really care about. It's like, I don't give a fuck about the money, to be honest. Like, I don't want to like flex with a Mercedes or, you know, nice this, nice that. Like, I don't give a shit. I just want to do shit that makes me happy, and that's when the real success will come. But don't get me wrong, I want to be rich, but because I want to buy my freedom, I want to buy my time, and so I can do more of the things I'm already doing on a higher scale.
Well, the thing is, like, it probably makes it easier as well that you're traveling around the world and doing all this with your brother.
It's the best. You know why? Because especially as a comedian, bro, like, oh man, I feel bad for other comics because they desperately need someone like him that's not a comedian in mind to see things in a larger light in a business perspective. Because a lot of these comics, they're so like narrow-minded about like, oh, I just got to do this, I got to do this. And the number one thing I always heard when I was starting comedy is like, up until this day, there are bitter comedians who are always like, yo, man, like this shit's hard, man. You know, like fucking, they're only 1% of people will make it in comedy. And they say it to you like it's like, you're not going to make it. But I'm like, well, of course you're never going to make it if you think that.
Yes.
I'm like, as for me, even when I first started, I was like, well, why can't I be the 1%?
Yeah.
Fuck that. I don't know. Like, who cares? You're not going to affect me by saying this shit. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's the difference. It could very well never happen. I could very well never even become the 1%. But if you don't strive towards it, you're never even going to get close to that goal. So
What's the comedy scene like in Toronto? Is it more like supportive and encouraging, or is it a little bit bitter? Like obviously I mentioned we watch heaps of Kill Tony, so I hear a little bit about the different markets and what they're like. Is it, yeah, what, how would you describe like the scene in Toronto?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. From my experience, the actual comedians and the talent that comes out of Toronto is some of the best in the world. Some of the funniest comedians come out of Toronto. But the mindset and the work ethic is heavily lacking. And their marketability is not there. They're not resourceful as much. I don't know what it is. It's just a very like small city mindset kind of thing where it's like, oh, they just have to, they want to be the kings of this one area. But I'm like, that means nothing. There's, look at all this other shit that's going on in the world. Like this is not, you're nothing. So that's why I don't really want to be the king of anywhere. I want to just like, I want to always learn from other people. Like I love learning from even comics who are younger than me or who are only 2 years in. You know what I'm saying? Because there's always something to learn. So in terms of the scene in Toronto, it's like there's a lot of that. It's a lot of just like very local-minded shit. And that's why I had to leave. Like I had to like, you know, come to Australia. I'm going to the U.S. It's like at some point. And plus, like Canada doesn't really give a shit about the arts in the first place.
Really?
Same with here, I feel.
I always like imagine Canada as like a very artsy place.
Nah, man. It is. Like there are artsy people. But like the government, no, like there's no culture for comedy in the arts.
Yeah.
Unless it's like bands or shit. But like. Yeah. But comedy, like, no one gives a shit. So that's why a lot of the best comedians, they move to the U.S. and they make it there. And that's unfortunately what I have to do.
How's your style of comedy gone down in Canada? Like, heaps of different skits, different accents and stuff. Yeah. Like, have they ever tried to, like, cancel you or come after you for one? Like, the podcast that you and that other guy do when it's, like, the Indian security for, like, all the different fucking
the Chinese dim sum
like,
owners?
All
yeah.
that shit is so fucking funny. But, like, I know some people would watch that and just see one video hit their For You feed, don't know it's you, and you do all these different things. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. Have you experienced that?
Yeah, all the time. People think I'm racist every day. But I'm like, hey, fuck face.
Yeah.
I grew up, my whole, that's the beauty of growing up in Toronto. That's why I love Toronto, is because it's a melting pot of diversity. It's one of the most diverse places in the world, hands down. Because there's over 200 nationalities. Every single person you pass by is a different background of person. So my group of friends, I always joke, I'm like, we're the United Nations, dude. I got Tamil friends, Indian friends, Arab friends, white friends, Chinese friends, you know, Persian friends. I got the whole spectrum, right? So it's like, the thing is that separates me from like people who are just like doing an accent or whatever, I think is because I grew up with all these people. I've been over to their houses. I've met their parents. I've eaten their food. I've you know, I've danced with them. I've enjoyed their music. I've learned their language. You know what I'm saying? And so I feel like I'm not putting them down. I'm representing for every culture.
Yeah.
So that's how I see it. My intentions are that I want to represent these people because it's an extension of who I am. This is how I grew up. What do you want me to do? Like, we grew up fucking making fun of each other's moms and their accents. So, I don't give a shit. It actually doesn't even affect me at all. Because I'm like, all right, man, you just don't have context.
Yeah.
That's why you're trying to cancel me. Mm-hmm. But that's not, like, it's never going to affect me. Like, I'm uncancelable.
Yeah, especially as well internally, if you know your own values and your intentions, like, none of that shit really fucking matters.
Doesn't,
right? The people around you, the people that actually know you, they know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's such an afterthought. Like, that's what I'm saying. But this is me. There's a lot of other people, like, who are scared to this day that
For
I know
sure.
personally. They're like, oh, I don't know if I could do this video. I don't know if I could do this. And it's, like, very tame compared to even what I'm doing. And I don't even think
do
I'm
you
offensive.
Do you limit yourself in any way for
never,
that reason?
Never, yeah. never. Like, the trans pronoun stuff. All that stuff, like if I think it's funny or I have an interest in talking about it, I'll talk about it.
Yeah.
I'll never hold back. And there are some things I don't touch because I just don't know enough about it.
Yeah,
I just like, I'm not even going to force it. But that's where the authenticity comes from, right? And so, man.
Has it ever been like it got to the point where like bigger media publications or are trying to target you or just like the individuals on the internet?
Nah, man. Luckily, it's never happened. Yeah. It's funny. And that's the thing too is because you know why it works for me as well? Because I post so much shit. It's sometimes just like people just forget.
Right?
Quickly. Because I'm like, oh man, another video. That's a different kind of video. I'm like, holy shit, this guy's a monster.
Yeah.
And because I have my mom in my videos too, I think it gives me a little bit of leeway because like, I'm very close to my mom and like we have a sweet relationship and people see that and they're like, oh man, like, you know, he can't be that bad of a person. Like, look, his mom's in his videos and she's such an angel, right? And so that kind of like little gets me a little bit advantage.
What would you say is your like biggest character right now? Is it like the Persian one that's having a moment? What would you say is like what's getting the most attention right now?
Well, it's funny because that's obviously one of the first ones I ever created when I, so back in the day, the right? Based off like the most something that's closest to me, which is like my family, my mom specifically, but like, you know, uncles and shit too, right? But the first thing that did blow me up for real was the Gary Vee ones.
Was that in like lockdown period as well?
Yeah. Well, it was pretty much just before, I think. Okay, yeah. But yeah, during that time it was like heavily. But after that, like a lot of them, like the Persian character, obviously that's like one of my best characters and people love that character the most.
The accent is so specific, but obviously so, like you nail it. It's like so fucking, I can't say.
No, thank you. Yeah. I mean, it's something that's closest to me. It's like the easiest thing for me to do. And I enjoy it heavily. I'd never get tired of it. People don't get tired of it. Like it's just, and it's such a unique character because like there's a lot of Persian people in the world, but there's no representation for them as much. There's only like 3 comedians in the world that are Persian.
Yeah.
And I'm the only one that's this age from Canada and has this like modern twist on like on jokes about my culture and other cultures. And so I feel like I'm in a good spot for for what I do.
When you go on stage, do you feel like sometimes people are expecting characters rather than stand-up? Or how was like navigating being maybe more famous for the characters and skits? Mm. But then like I watched your special that's on your website as well. I was like,
yeah, it was
proper,
right.
It's proper stand-up.
Yeah.
Like was there a bit of like you get people like, wait, what am I going to see?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I appreciate that. But honestly, I look back at that special now. I'm like, oh, this is garbage. But, you know, well, my own critic.
2 years ago, always going to grow like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny because like I just did a show last night too. And like I've been working on new material for my next tour, which will be in 2025. And already this new material that's like 15, 20 minutes that it's like good stuff is already better than that entire tour that I've worked on for 5 years before. Right.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it's always like you almost have to put that shit out for you to like grow from it, right? And so whatever, it's always a positive thing. But yeah, like that's the thing about the I guess not really downside, but the different part about like growing a big following on social media, especially like at a younger age in my career, is that like sometimes the content grows faster than my skill level.
Oh, of course.
So that's why you have to be careful about. And that's why actually I'm very happy, we're both happy that we're not blowing up too fast. Mm-hmm. I think it's been very gradual for years.
Yeah.
Right? Slow growth, very just inching
like consistent,
away.
Consistent,
Consistently. I'd rather that than like Matt Rife, fucking 20 million.
Yeah, out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. Like, crazy. But like he's funny, he's good, but it's just like, I wouldn't want to have to deal with that right now.
Yeah.
I'm not ready. I'm not ready for that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to take my time. Life is so long. Mm-hmm. And as a comedian, you get better with age.
Like, longevity is important.
Longevity is so important. Like, I don't want to, because like, once you have 20 million followers, like, what's next? Right? I want to earn that shit when I'm like 50, 60. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm like, finally, like, fuck, like, we're here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that the journey is what I love the most. And that's what Gary talks about too. Yep. Once again, right? Yep. All on board with that stuff. I'm so on board. So, but yeah, anyway, and to answer your question about the characters, people do expect the characters when they come, but also because I post so much about my life, I'm very real on my stories. I talk about real shit sometimes.
As well on
I
YouTube,
vlog, I do podcasts. Yeah. Like I know I talk about like, you know, I'm vulnerable about my weight loss journey, and like, you know, I talk about my mom and like, you know, just like real stuff sometimes. And I show a lot of my life. I document. People just come because they genuinely like me as for who I am.
And
I'm very grateful for that because now like even if they don't see a character that they know or whatever it is, or maybe just like one line, they still are having a good time because it's like I'm there in front of them, right?
Yeah.
And they also know I do other things too. So there's obviously like it would be dumb to expect, oh, let me just see this one thing because I only follow them for this one thing. But in general, I realized this is the part that a lot of comedians struggle with adapting with social media, is because of social media, like people know me for my social media content. So it's like, why not include some of that in stand-up? And that's the adapting to stand-up era, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can't just do traditional stand-up anymore. If people follow you for one thing, you have to at least include some of it into your stand-up. And so that's why I've been really good at doing now. And it's been a great
weaving
flow.
Some of that
a
in.
Great mix of both. And like I think I found the sweet spot. So it's like stories. It's very stand up still, but then like adding the accents, right? And they're okay. I know the accent. Like I love this story, right? So,
are you naturally good at accents, or do you like put work into learning your accent before you put it into it?
Like, a bit of both. Bit of both. Like some of them come very natural to me because, like I said, how I grew up, I was raised like Indian people around me though my whole life, Chinese people my whole life, Persians obviously. So it's like I can switch it on immediately if I wanted to. But some of the other ones that I wasn't as close with, I do have to watch a little bit on YouTube. I have to watch some people and I mimic them a little bit. and then I can get it pretty easily.
Dude, your mate that you doing Joe Rogan, him doing Theo Von.
Yeah.
Oh nah, my God, he's Theo. Oh, we saw Theo, like, he was in Sydney like a few weeks ago.
Yeah, nice.
His Theo Von voice was so fucking so good. Dude, I was dying.
I know, he's great too, man. Yeah.
Is he like from back in Canada?
Yeah, he's from the same area actually. Yeah, cool. Just as talented.
Talking about like your characters and kind of that growth. When was the first time? Like, how long were you doing the Gary Vee thing before? Like. He like started like replying to you, and obviously you'd end up opening VCon for him and stuff. But how long were you doing him before he hit you up and be like, dude, I love this shit?
Man, it was so crazy because I actually, the first video I ever posted of Gary Vee was just like for a joke. Like, I didn't even like want to do it. I was just like, I was like, because the thing is with me, when I start to post on socials, whatever I was listening to in my real life, like people I would watch or whatever, I would just immediately try to do impressions of them. Just for fucks, like for jokes. And I started posting the Gary Vee ones. The first one I did, a lot of people were like, yo, what the fuck is hilarious? Yo, do more. I was like, all right. And then like, it's funny because like in retrospect, looking back now at that video, I'm like, what the fuck? Doesn't even sound like it.
Yeah.
It's garbage. But once again, you have to start somewhere, right? So I started doing those videos, and then slowly but surely, they start to blow up quickly. And then one video I remember fucking took off on TikTok, and it was like 2-3 million views. And that was the first time he commented blueberries on the post. And that was like a year and a half after all the videos I was putting out. Like every week I was doing Gary Vee videos.
Wow.
Long time. Yeah. I was like, fuck, finally he fucking commented. I was like,
what
sick.
Was the big one? Was it like talking to like someone like every like giving advice?
Yeah, so, no, it was the first one I think. Yeah, the first one was I was in a room. I was in a kitchen with like three people, and like I was going down the line, and they were like, "Hey, Gary, like I want to do this, but how do I do this?" And I'm like, "Bro, like you know, giving them advice."
Yeah, yeah.
And then by the third one, some guy's like, "Yo, I just don't think I have enough time." And then he's like, and then he starts having a seizure on the ground. I don't know if you've seen that one.
I have seen that one. I was like, ages ago. Bro,
like, and then so much fucking time, and like I'm like seizuring on the ground, and someone's like, "Someone get this guy an NFT." And then that's the video that blew up first.
Yeah.
Out of all of them, and then from there it was like a fucking trickle effect. Like the next one was me and my friend, and then he stops me on the street. He's like, "Hey Gary, like I'm 20 years old, like you know, blah blah blah." And I'm like, "20 years old?" And like, you know, he's just like fainting again. And it's like a different thing. That blew up again. And then he liked a couple of the videos, commented a couple of times. And then after the 2-year mark, he finally DM'd me.
Wow.
And he's like, "Hey man, love your stuff. Like keep going." Yeah. I was like, "Holy shit, this
That's
is crazy.
Crazy
like,
right?
It's funny because like I took his advice, his motto about like, you know, post content
hold
that
approach.
You love, hold approach, like just keep posting shit. Don't worry about judgments and like just be consistent." And then like, you know, I started doing impressions of him. And then he saw my impressions of him, and now he's responding to me. I'm like, this is fucking nuts.
That's the game.
This is Gary-ception right now. And so, and then that's it. And then finally, like a couple weeks after, they emailed my brother and like, "Hey, we'd love to have him at VCon." I was like, what the
Dude,
fuck?
That's hilarious.
That's crazy. It's nuts. But fuck. Like that right there should prove anything's possible because Gary Vee was the king of internet for like years, right? And the fact that I just took his advice of posting content, and now I'm opening in front of 4,000 people as Gary Vee, first person
were
they
the
see
first
on stage.
One that
yeah,
out?
I was in the first.
Oh god, that's so
like
good.
How insane is that, right?
That's hilarious.
And so that's why I took that motto and that kind of like that the thing about like you know what else can I do? And that's why I started doing David Goggins, right? Love David Goggins. Yeah. Did a video of me running as David Goggins with my shirt off. And like, you know, obviously, fucking blew up. He reposted the video on his page.
Oh, dude.
DM'd me. I actually a screenshot I have is of him DMing me, and it's on my home screen. I'll show you right now if you want.
Do it. Yeah.
I don't know if you see it on the camera, but
we'll punch in.
So literally, he says, you know, I reposted one of his videos talking about something that like really was relatable to me, and I was like, yo, like, fucking love David Goggins, blah blah. And then he DMs me, "Keep grinding, brother. You have many more levels in your game. Time to outwork and focus. Stay hard." And I was like, holy shit, this is nuts. And then I go, "Yeah, I'm gonna show these motherfuckers, man." I was so amped. I was like, "Thank you for your content and hard work. It's always inspiring." He's like, "Fucking love that. Let people see who you really are." And bro, dude. I've had this on my homepage for the past year.
Yeah.
And that's literally like, honestly, is one of the reasons why I'm like shedding weight and I'm getting fit because
it
fucking like fired me up. And I'm like, well, I can't let David Goggins down. Mm-hmm. He'll fuck me up. He'll start yelling at me and then like force me to run a 13-hour run. And I can't run for an hour right now. But you know what I'm saying? Like, So I did that. Alex Hormozy, same thing.
Dude, I dressed up as Hormozy for, we did a podcast a year ago and he free shared on his thing. I
amazing. Chat with him in the day. There you go. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And then I met Hormozy in Vegas. We had dinner together.
Such a good character,
But also because he also is a fan of my Persian videos.
Yeah.
So it's like,
he's like Iranian as well.
He's Persian. Him Persian and Layla, they're both Persian. Yeah, exactly. So
they're both killing it.
That's what I'm saying. And so that's why I'm like, man, like anything's possible. Like, and I'm just lucky that, you know, I've met the people I actually do look up to. Bro, every single one of them.
And it all started from posting videos on social media. Isn't that like?
It's so easy, to be honest, to think about.
It shows you the world we live in now.
That's like, it, bro.
The opportunity is there for anyone.
Yeah. Like, go just fucking make my man. Fuck.
Oh, and you, like being an actor as well, like you do Gary Vee the first time, but by the time you've done it 50 times, you're actually like everything's getting developed. You've got the earphones, the beat, like everything's getting stronger and stronger and stronger. So it just gets better and better and better the more you do it.
Yeah, I appreciate
it. It's actually as well like a fucking strategy as well for like, only if you're good at impressions, but like, okay, you think about all the success you've had with them. Are you always thinking, who's going to be my next celebrity character I can and 100%. Find an exploit? Like, because it's just so much.
There's so much out there, right? It's like the Joe Rogan ones, right? Like, same with that. Like, that one, even Joe Rogan has seen a couple of videos now of me as Joe Rogan. Like, he hasn't responded to me yet, but Theo Vaughn, I opened for him in Windsor.
You opened for Theo Vaughn?
Yeah, wow, in my hometown.
Dude, that's
epic.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. And he told me, he's like, hey, man, like, that video's funny, man. Like, you know, I can't do it, but, you know. But he's like, I showed Rogan your videos, like, real good shit, man. Yeah, and I was like, thanks. Yeah, good shit, bro. And like, whatever. I was like, oh, sick. Like, that's dope.
And, like, just for people in comedy as well, like, your style is so different to Theo Vaughn. And we also saw, not long before him, Andrew Schultz.
Schultz enjoyed both
so different styles. Theo was just talking life stories.
Yeah.
And I didn't stop laughing the whole fucking time, man. Like, there's a path for fucking everyone to do this. But
100%.
You mentioned before, I definitely wanted to ask you about it because I think it's really fucking cool as well. Like, to be able to, on top of traveling the world and putting the grind in for all the content, everything, that you realize, hey, fuck it, I'm going to get healthy and get fit as well.
Yeah.
What sparked, apart from Goggins, which I understand, what sparked that moment in your life that you're like, you know what, today's the day I've had enough?
Oh, man, many different times, but there was one moment, actually pretty much before the pandemic hit, like the week before, I got diagnosed with a hypothyroid issue.
Yep.
It's called a Hashimoto's disease, but it's like, whatever, it's an autoimmune disorder, and it pretty much slows down my metabolism and my thyroid, which it's easy for me to gain weight. And so that happens by, you know, eating gluten, sugar, processed food, seed oil, shit like that. Like all those things I'm very passionate about now. You know, we watch Paul Saladino, carnivore MD, shit like that. it started then. And like, I was at a point where I was on the road so much as a comedian. I was like starting to like really like, you know, not tour, but I was just like doing shows in like different cities. You know, I was always back and forth, eating like shit, sleeping until 2 p.m., fucking no routines, no habits. Just everything's fucked. All my habits are just down the drain. And I messaged my brother when I was in a different city from Toronto. I was like, yo, man, like I'm coming back home this week. And like, man, I just need some help, bro. Like I feel like shit. And then that was the moment where he was also like really getting his health in order. We discovered guys like Dave Asprey, Mark Hyman, like people who are like into biohacking and shit like that. And it sounds cheesy and dumb, but like honestly, bro, it changed our lives because I'm at a point now where I've been off my medication for like a year, pretty much, and I've never felt better. Massive. I've cut out gluten, sugar, seed oils, like processed foods. I don't eat junk food. I don't binge eat. I fast. And all these things have helped me not only lose weight but get stronger. My energy is more flatlined throughout the day. I sleep much better. I wake up much earlier and consistently. I was waking up at like 1 or 2 p.m., like sporadically for my whole life.
Yeah.
I'm at like 8:30 now. Yeah. And obviously people wake up earlier than that, but I'm like, for me, massive jump. Yeah. And that's just now. I have so much more to go, but it was just a lot of different things that were, and like, you know, it was hard to move around as a comic. You're always on the road. You're fitting into airplane seats and having to ask for a seatbelt extender is fucking embarrassing.
Yeah.
And then when they bring you the seatbelt extender, they're like, I swear to God, they're like fucking dashing it to you like it's a drug deal. They're like, you know. They're like looking around like, is anyone even looking, you know? Because it's like they understand there's shame behind it, you know?
Yeah.
So it was a lot of psychological things like that too. And, you know, my back would give out. I'd be out for a week. It's like annoying things that just like stop you from doing what you love. And the thing is I realized is like if I want to be optimal as a comedian, 100% as a performer on stage, I have to be optimal as a human being first.
100%.
And that's what it was, man. I was like, fuck, I have to beat it somehow. I have to start somewhere. And it took time, man. It's been 5 years almost, and I'm pretty much just getting to the point where I'm beating my food addiction. Like, yeah. it's like, and the thing is about food addictions is that you have to eat every day. You don't have to do heroin every day, right? Those addictions, no, not that it's easy. I'm just saying it might be a little bit easier to, you know, beat those things. But food, it's like, man, I got to be around food every day. It's all like, day, how do you beat that shit? So that's it, man. And just building those habits, like having routines in the mornings, you know, doing like meditations has helped me a lot. Just being more grounded and in the moment and present. And I'm just grateful to, you know, be at this point now where I'm still fat, but I don't feel that way anymore.
Yeah. Because like I know energy levels will be fucking through the roof compared to 5 years ago.
Oh my God. It's night and day, dude. It's night and day, like heaps better.
Yeah.
you know, I have to pull out the eyes, you know, fucking heaps better, mate. Yeah.
Your dog.
Cheeky guy, right? But yeah, man. So, and that's the thing is like, and same with the content stuff. It's the consistency that matters. There's days where I'm like, fuck, man. Like, I gotta fucking eat ground beef and eggs again. Like, or you know, fucking, you know, I wish I could eat that sandwich. But then those are just like the previous fat Nima, who was obsessed with eating shit that just tasted good. I wasn't eating to fuel myself. I was eating to satisfy some weird satiating taste. You know what I'm saying?
There'll be so many people listening that are where you were 5 years ago, and like they've had the thoughts, which I imagine you would have done for like off and on for the years prior to you actually making the change. And it just seems so hard. And a lot of people tell themselves it's too difficult. I will never be able to do that. But like you've been able to do it. And I'm sure you mentioned all these new positive changes. I'm sure it didn't overnight. You started all of them. It starts with one. And then
one
you
day.
Stuck on that day. Yep. Like, and Goggin's another example. Mm-hmm. He says it himself. I was a big fat loser.
I know.
You know what I mean? And like if someone that weak-minded could now become literally the hardest person in the world.
Anything's possible.
Anything's possible, right?
Exactly. And I don't want to be Goggins. Like don't get me wrong. Like fucking that guy's an anomaly. No,
it's not a life.
It's not a life I want, honest. No. It's just impossible. With what I do, it's like it's not going to work.
Well, how do you manage that, like all these positive habits as well? It's so much harder. Like you said, like comedians, you often don't finish work to 1, 2 a.m. at times. And then you got to get home. How do you keep a routine? Like what's the hardest part about trying to be healthy or just try and be disciplined when you're on the road, living the life you do?
It's priorities, man. It's like no matter what happens, like if I have to not eat, I won't eat at this point. Whereas before, if I landed somewhere, I'm like, like fuck it. Like we're already on the road. Like,
or McDonald's.
Whatever.
Sorry.
Like Maccas.
You know Maccas. Maccas.
I know Maccas. I'm cultured. I know my Maccas. Hungry Jack's, you know?
That's Burger King for you guys.
Yeah, exactly. Not as many anymore. But but anyway, it's like before you just like mail it in. You're like, fuck it, man. Like just what's one it. Rap going to do or what's this? But that's how you spiral. It's like now we're at a point where we were staying in a boutique hotel, like whatever, just basic. Here in Sydney, and there's a small kitchenette, and who the fuck cooks in a small kitchenette on the road in a different city in a different country? We fucking do because it's one way or another. We have to stick to our plan. We have to stick to what our goals are, what we believe in, like value wise in terms of value, in terms of like our food and our diet, right? And that's it. Like if we go against it, then we're weak minded, and we're not doing what we said we would do. And we don't like to live that way. And
it's
just
so crazy, bro. Like, imagine Nima 6 years ago hearing you speak the way you speak.
No fucking way. It's two different people.
Like, right?
I had good intentions before, but I was lazy. I didn't have a vision. You know, I didn't have guidance. I pitied myself. I was weak-minded. You know, like, there were so many different issues. But that all changes over time with, like you said, like, it just starts with one day.
Yeah.
Right? I've been at this. I've been working out pretty much every day for almost a year at this point. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing 75 hard, so like that's been helping me.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like, you know, but I love it because it's not just a crash diet anymore. It's a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle.
And so that's the difference. Before I was like, oh man, I want to get to this weight and then I'll be good. But then I never thought about the post marker. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like I was like, what happens after? I never thought about it. But now I'm like, this is it for the rest of my life,
bro.
It's
so good to see you, man.
And that's it.
Fucking epic. Now, like, what about your career? Like, obviously you've come a long way already. You're definitely already in the top 1%. But like so far, obviously I know ambitious people what they're like. You'll feel like you've barely done anything and you have so many much more to achieve. But so far looking back at your career today, what stands out as like the biggest pinch me moment for you personally?
Oh man, being able to open for some of my comedic idols.
Like Russell Peters. Who else?
Russell Peters. Theo Von was fucking awesome.
I can't believe that.
You know, like... Howie Mandel.
You opened for Howie as well.
It was dope. Twice. Yeah. Wow. It was crazy, man. Like, you see these guys from when you're a kid. Like, Russell Peters specifically for me was my very first inspiration in comedy. When I was a kid, I was watching him on TV. That was when he was blowing up.
Yes.
When he was blowing up. And then, like, the fact that 20 years later, I'm opening in front of 16,000 people in my hometown for him, in his hometown, is the most insane thing to ever happen to me, to be honest. And I never would have thought, like, when I started comedy. Like, imagine I didn't drop out. This would never happen.
And weren't you given, like, 10 minutes notice as well? He's just like,
Yeah, literally. It was literally, like, just because we were originally invited to just go hang out backstage. Yeah. It was like, we found out that they're also fans of my videos. Yeah, once again, social media, right? Yep. We go backstage, and then, like, we were in Ottawa, Ontario, in Canada, and there was 9,000 people at the show, and Clayton, which is Russell's brother, tells my brother to, you know, tell me something. My brother comes to me, he's like, yo, how do you feel about going on stage for 10 minutes? This was 10 minutes before showtime. And then, obviously, my initial reaction is like, oh, fucking of course, but also I'm like, fuck. Oh, shit, what do I got to do? Like, what 10 minutes am I supposed to do right now? And then, so, but that's where the preparation comes in handy. Mm-hmm. I've been doing stand-up for fucking 7 years at this point.
Yeah.
I have 10 minutes. Yeah. And I was actually, that specific moment, I was actually ready to go on my own tour. So I had 45 minutes ready. But I was like, now what 10 minutes should I do
for
this
show? How
do you
do that when you have like such little time to prepare? Like, are you taking like a 10-minute chunk? Are you picking your best jokes from different parts? How do you approach that and put it together and then not fuck it up when you're out there?
Sometimes, bro, you just got to fucking... Just try just some shit. In, yeah. Just dive in. You never know. You never know. But the thing is, because it's Russell, and I think my brand of humor is very similar to his, and like
for
people
sure.
always compare me to him.
Yeah.
I feel like his audience is also my audience. So it's like whatever I do, they'll enjoy.
Yeah.
And so I had that confidence going in, but I was obviously like starstruck almost. Like I was just like,
fuck yeah.
I was like so nervous, but excited that like, I don't know, I didn't know what to expect. But obviously they're all like, yo, just go up there and do what you know. Like,
you've been
doing this for so, like, it's just another set, which is true. It's just like you attach it to something that's so special because, you know.
What were the nerves like? Because like anyone's like hero, one of their idols, one of their mentors just gives you a spot like that. Most people be like, fucking. Like,
yeah, for sure. I was, I was so nervous. I was like breathing in. I was like, fuck, all right. Fuck, shit. All right. Damn. Yeah. What do I do?
Yeah.
And then I could, you know, my brother and another team member was with me. He's like, bro, just like do these two bits because they've been seeing my bits and like, yo, just do these ones.
Yeah.
Like those are pretty much the main ones and then just have fun. And I was like, all right, okay, I'll do these bits. And then that's it. I just kind of like, I was like, oh, man, I hope I don't fuck this up. Like, I hope I hit my time. I don't want to go too over or too under. It's like all these things you got to think about. And like, I went from before 9,000 people. The biggest I ever performed was like 400 or 500 before that.
Wow.
Right? And so I was like, this is a big jump because it's not about, because like now it's like you have to actually pace yourself
but
better.
It's like completely different timing and pacing as well.
It's totally
right?
different. Totally
how
different.
Do you, like, what? It's a bit too technical. Who cares?
It's good. No.
Like, how do you adjust to that on the fly?
Well, that's because of experience. Because, you know, like if you're not an idiot, you'd realize, okay, because there's more people. Like, you have to wait for the laughs to come back a little bit longer than a smaller room.
Yeah.
Same with the intimate room. It's like, if there's 20 people, you go rapid fire, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
200, you're like, all right, a little slower. And then 9,000, obviously, much slower. So, but you just have to feel it out. That's when the experience and comfortability on stage comes out. Because I was so comfortable at that point because of all the stage time.
Yeah.
You sit in the laughs. You almost have to, you have to listen. You have to listen to, like, be like, all right, man, it's like, just like the laugh is big. Now it's on its way down. All right, hit him with the next line.
So it's like
it's just about listening. I think it's good. That's why it's good to like talk to girls, because I feel like, you know, when you listen well and you respond back and you ask a question, it's like a fucking, it's practice for stand up. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's why I like doing it too, and that's why it's very valuable having female energy and female friends around you for that reason. To be honest, so shout out women.
Shout out to the women in the room.
Shout out to the women.
Big respect.
Yeah, big respect. Big respect. So it's the same kind of idea. Yeah. You know, it's like you have to be a good listener.
Yeah.
It's not just about you performing. You have to also let them
perform
in a way.
It's a give and take, right?
Give and take.
It's
a massage, you know? It's a fucking, you know,
it's
a dance. It's a dance. It's a fucking, you know, samba, you know? You gotta fuck salsa, you know? But so, yeah, man, I went up on stage, and actually the funny thing is just before I went up on stage, that first show, Russell was beside me, and he's like, I was like, yo, man, like, fuck, thanks for the opportunity, man. It's my first time, like, doing a show this big. Any advice? And he's like, yeah, just don't bomb. And I was like, oh, fuck.
That's what you're
I was like, in a way, actually, that helped me a lot because I was like, if he doesn't, like, care too much, like he's more like chill about it, then that made me like calm down. And I was like, oh, okay, like, you know, it's like he's just joking around. That means he trusts me. So
once you hit the stage at your first line out, do you go into like a flow state and you're 100%. Like completely just fucking roll with it?
That's why it's so important to have pretty much like one of your best jokes at the beginning. You want, because you want to start off with a quick laugh. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as a comedian hears a laugh, like in the first few seconds, you get in the zone now. Now you're like, all right, man, cool. I got them a little bit. Let's fucking go.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I luckily had one of the best sets of my life that night, that first night. Wow. And then I did so well. They're like, come tomorrow to the next show. Did it again. Killed it. And then the next night, back home in our hometown in Toronto, in the biggest arena, 16,000 people, same shit. They're like, yo, man, like, you know, go do another 10. I was like,
fuck. How does it work when you start opening for bigger and bigger comedians and getting out there? Like, is your brother sending outreach or are they coming to you? Like, can you hustle it as well? Or you kind of got to bring them, like, create the all the content, let them come to you with that sort of stuff?
I think it's a bit of both. But for the most part, I feel like, yeah, we pretty much got reached out to from other people. Like Theo Von's manager is a big fan of my hockey videos. I do like hockey player videos, like kind of like a jock, kind of that kind of character. It's a very Canadian character. And he's from like the hometown of where Theo Von was performing. And that's where I was, where we kind of live too. And he's like, yo, like, we'd love to, for you to come and do open for Theo. I was like, fuck yeah. Like, obviously, you know what I'm saying? So same with Howie Mandel. Like I got referred from my comedy program.
The
executive guy who runs the program, he put in a good word because I did a good job when I was there 7 years ago.
If you could open, or not open, if you could do a show with any comedian in the world, who would it be?
Andrew Schultz, baby.
Andrew Schultz.
Schultz is the go. I love Schultz. He's one of my favorites of all time. He's blazing the trail for like this generation of social media, right? Because he blew up from social media, not the other way around. Mm-hmm. People know him because of social media.
All those, so, like, that was like in the pandemic when he was doing those talking to the camera, that's when he really fucking blew up, dude. Yeah. And I think, but you couldn't try and do what Schultz does. Everyone needs to find their own fucking style within that.
But that's the thing. That's the beauty of what we do is, like, you know, you there is a platform for everyone.
Yeah.
There's space for everybody.
Yeah. So, without a doubt. So what's next? This podcast is going to drop on Tuesday, so pretty soon. Where are you? So you got Brisbane, is it tonight?
Next week? No, Brisbane is May 25th.
Okay, cool.
And we're doing two shows. Like, first one's pretty much sold out. We're going to announce the second one this week. So
shout out Brisbane.
Shout out Brizzy. And then May 9th is in Melbourne. It's sold out. So thank you to everybody. Too late. Yeah. But we're going to keep doing more shows. We're going to announce Adelaide and Perth in September, October, maybe.
So you're going to be here pretty much for the rest of 2024, right?
Yeah. And we have to leave officially on January 2nd, or else we have to go pick avocados, which not down to
you. Do your farm work?
Not doing my farm work, buddy. I gotta do jokes on stage, not pick avocados, bro.
No, that's okay.
That would be the most embarrassing. Nima Naz, comedian, picks avocados for 3 months.
What has been the most embarrassing moment? I mean, comedians, I'm sure they don't really embarrass too much, but is there anything that stands out as like an embarrassing moment?
On stage or just
on stage
in general?
Or in life. In general.
Fuck, man. I have no shame.
Yeah.
to be honest.
I feel like you can't really have much shame if you make it as a comedian, right?
No. And the thing that comes to my head is like earlier on when I was doing YouTube, I was like watching a lot of prank videos and people are doing stuff like that. I did a video one time of me taking my shirt off when I was like my biggest too. When I was like, as fat as I ever was, I was always confident for some reason. I have no idea why.
Hey, that's the best.
Anyway, I took off my shirtless completely in the middle of a busy intersection in Toronto and just started yelling, I'm a little bitch. And I was like, look back now, I'm like, that's so cringe. Why would I do that?
Yeah.
Just like, because I was like, I don't know. I was still naive. I was still new and like, I was trying shit. But anyway, stuff like that is always embarrassing. Yeah. You know,
what's one thing about Australia / Australians?
Australia?
That like just doesn't make sense to like a Canadian, like, or annoys you. Like, what's one thing we do that's just like, what the fuck's wrong with you guys?
Fucking everything's sweet as.
Sweet as.
Hot as. Hot as what, dude? Finish your sentence.
Our language is really fucking cooked, isn't it, compared to like.
Oh my God, fucking, you know, heaps this, you know, fucking, you know. Avo, you know, smash Avo, you know, fucking
get on the tinnies.
Tinnies, yeah, fucking Siggy, you know. Well, I mean, to be honest, I think the slang is jokes aside is like interesting and it's actually I think it's kind of funny, but
it's very unique to anywhere else in the world the way we shorten every word and have different words.
It's so different. It's like my thing is like I have like a joke about it on stage very like quick. I'm like, yeah, like, you know, every time I talk to an Aussie guy, they're like, yeah, it's like fucking it's hot as. I'm like, wait, what? Like, what do you mean? Like hot as what? and then you're always just like, I'm tired. You finish it. I don't want you figure it out. I don't want to. It's hot as, man. I don't know. Like, you finish it. I don't know. It's like, I'm like, just like, that's why I feel like
hot as what, bro?
Yeah, that's how I I feel like you guys came up with this short and shaved because you're just like, oh, I'm fucking relaxed. Just figure it out.
We don't even realize what we're doing. But last question, we'll wrap it up. And I know you get this a lot, but like, I just think like you think about things probably because you've got like the whole Gary Vee influence as well. Mm-hmm. And you clearly think about the business and the growth side of it as well. Yep. You're not just a comedian that goes and sinks 10 beers a night and then wakes up and does the process. What's your like, what would you say to people? Not even advice, but what would you say to people or yourself 10 years ago before you had started? Because there's some people listening to this podcast who like people that have a dream to go out and try and do something exciting and fun for themselves, but they haven't started because of fear of failure, limiting beliefs. Mm-hmm. What would you say to them?
It's so hard not to be Gary Vee right now.
Well, my next question was going to be, what would Gary Vee say?
Yeah, well, literally, yeah.
Let's
literally.
Just go, we can jump straight into the Gary Vee response if you want.
No, like literally, like you have one life.
Yeah.
You know, and it's also like, actually, man, it's so crazy you asked because I just saw a video of Gary talking to, I think it was Tim Dillon, it was on his podcast, about like how none of this matters at the end of the day. And it's true because it's like Prince died. And then for like 24 hours, they gave him his flowers. And then like a week later, like people, the world keeps moving. It's like no one's even thinking about that anymore. And it's unfortunate, but it's human nature. And so it's like, why waste time doing something you don't enjoy doing, talking to the people that you don't enjoy being around, worrying about fucking people's opinions that like they don't even know, have full context on your life, right? It's like, then another thing too is like, I realized a lot of people, so many people in the world think that other people are judging them or like they're criticizing them, but you don't realize those people are worried about their own shit.
They just care about
way more than you think. And they care about you way less than you think. So just do, if you can, at least try some shit on the side first, right? Like don't limit yourself because you think, ah, fuck it. Like, you know, this person's going to think this or that person's going to think that. Like, it's like, you'd be surprised of how liberated you feel when you start actually doing things that you enjoy. And like, it's such a simple concept, but it's for some reason so tough for humans to actually try it, you know?
I just always think like the biggest risk is like getting on your deathbed and then like, imagine like you're there and then like, what God or whatever you call it comes and shows you like a picture of what your life could have been. And like, this is what was written for you if you went and did it, but you never chose to.
Mm-hmm.
That's the scariest thing ever. Like, dude, then embarrassing yourself or failing or going back with one or two steps, like, dude,
and also
cares?
People will forget, bro, quickly. Exactly. Like you think, oh man, imagine you like, I don't know, you tripped over something and it's embarrassing in front of people.
Yeah.
That person's not going to think about that after the next 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Like it's still like that. That's the best way to look at it. Yeah. Because I'm like, I don't know, like people who like take selfies in public or like they're too scared to whatever, like film themselves. I'm like, bro, like this person's not even thinking about it. Like that's look at that guy. He's filming himself. That's weird. And then they move on with their day.
Yeah.
So, and also it's like regret is one of the worst feelings to ever have in life, I think. Like you're saying, like you're on your deathbed.
Yeah.
Because my brother actually has been to a retirement home and he asked people who are like on their way out, what's your biggest regret? And they're like, not being closer with my family has been the most common answer. Mm-hmm. Not being closer with my family, cherishing my daughter's time, my son's time, like being with my kids, being with my wife, you know, like cherishing relationships.
Yeah.
Because like humans thrive most off of relationships. Nothing else really matters, to be honest. And like, and that's why I truly believe in too. It's like at the end of the day, like what's the point of all this if I can't share it with people I love? So,
dude, and you realize that as well in like certain moments in life. Like I've been, as I said at the start, I've had like a hiatus hernia. I don't know if you know what it is. It's like a hernia where the top of my stomach is like popping through, like it's pushing up through my esophagus, obviously where it's not meant to be. And I'm generally a very healthy person. You're like, I'm pretty go. I've been like just the last few days I've been feeling kind of better again, but like no work, no living my normal life. We lost my nan about 2 weeks ago as well. It's like in these moments you realize, bro, the most important things are health and your family. All this other like false fucking pressure you put on yourself and expectation, when it all gets boiled down to it, it can be hard to have that perspective when you're just in the thick of things. But when something happens and you have to slow down or you lose someone you're close to, everything becomes so fucking clear, man.
Yeah.
Everything becomes so clear.
You're gone and that's it. Like,
that's it.
You're never going to be around anymore, so who cares?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And what would Gary Vee say?
Bro, just fucking value time, okay? You have so much time, but not really fucking that much.
Oh, shout out, Gary. We love you. And where's the best place people can find you? You're going to be in Australia for about another 6, 7, 8 months.
Yeah.
So there'll be plenty of opportunities for people to come and see you. You'll be hitting all the major cities, I imagine. Where's the best place to find either tour dates or just your content online, all that sort of good stuff?
Yeah, Nima Naz on all socials, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, you know, I'm all over. And OnlyFans soon. You
as
know.
Well. That'll be, we're going to shoot that.
That's, that's if all else fails, OF,
we'll see
baby.
You there, baby.
Yeah. No,
you're the best, bro. Thank you for giving us your time. Yeah, definitely let us know next time you're in Sydney. I'll be there 100%.
100%, man. We'd love to see you.
Thanks so much, brother.
Appreciate
you.
Have a great day.
Done. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode or you got something out of it, do yourself a favor, do me a favor, do your friends a favor and share this with them and they can come along on this journey with us. Thanks again and I'll see you next time.